introduce ourselves. So my name is Jack, and I am 36 years old, and today is November 23rd, 2017, and I'm speaking with my dad, Jan Hinnan. We are recording this in Tuscaloosa, Alabama. Say who you are.
My name is Jan Hinnan. I'm 65 and Jack's father.
Obviously in the same place.
I think you better pause.
Yeah. So I would really love to know, tell me the story of how you met Mom.
Well, you want me to go ahead and answer that?
Yeah, answer it. Okay. Yeah, go for it. How'd you meet Mom?
Well, my father, of course.
Tell me the story of how you met Mom.
My father is a Presbyterian pastor, and he accepted a call to the church in which Marcia Snow was a congregant. And so, actually, he took the church while I was in college, freshman in college, actually. And so when I came home for Christmas, it was the first time I met people in the church. Marsha being one of them, who was actually a student at LSU at the time. So we met each other at that point, but we didn't really become acquainted. We just, you know. So the summer rolled around, and we both came home from school. And actually, I was engaged to another girl that I'd met in high school at the time. Over time, that didn't work out, and so... So I came home for some holiday, I forget what it was, and there was a concert at the junior college there in Marion, and asked Marcia's sister, Becca, out to go to the concert, and had a horrible time. Becca, of course, knew everybody. I knew nobody, and I didn't have much fun, so I decided at that point I wasn't going to date any more of the Snow Girls. You know, so
there were 18 of them, so...
four to be precise.
Four,
but well, actually five. Sandra wasn't in the mix. But at any rate, as things went along, my mother started putting pressure on me to date Marcia. I resisted that because, you know, I didn't want to. And actually had other friends that I was interested in. But finally decided that I would date Marcia just to get my mother off my back. And so... we went out and had a thoroughly delightful time. and the rest basically is history, but that's how I met your mother.
Awesome. And y'all been married how long?
Oh, goodness. 74. 43 years. Yeah.
Fantastic. That's great.
Speaks well of your mother.
And you. Can you tell me about your wedding day? Or maybe about your honeymoon?
Is it recording?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. The wedding day. Well, as you know, I don't think your mother is on time for anything. The old joke about being late for your funeral was applicable.
Yeah.
And I was flat determined we were not going to be late for the wedding. If I remember right, the wedding was scheduled to be at 1 o'clock in the afternoon. We did not have it at the church for various reasons, but had it instead at the chapel at Judson College. And so I went over to the Snow's house at 9 o'clock in the morning and fetched your mother, put all her clothes in bags and stuff, and dragged her off to the with Becca in tow.
Uh-huh.
And Becca's like, "Oh, it's your wedding day. You can't see the bride before the wedding." And I said, "The heck with that. We're not going to be late." Uh-huh. And we weren't.
Yeah.
So, the other thing that I really liked about the wedding day itself was we had a photographer from Talladega who's my roommate in college. His father was a professional photographer, Van Buren.
Mm-hmm.
And the wedding, the chapel was kind of upstairs, and the reception was going to be held on downstairs. And so, you know, we're the first ones to come out of the chapel, coming down the steps, and he's leading us, kind of taking pictures. And so we get to the reception book And so I thought it'd be cute for us to sign
our
section.
Own. Yeah.
So I've got the pen. And I look at Marcia and I ask, "How should we sign this?"
Mm-hmm.
You know. And at that moment, he takes a picture, and that's one of my favorite pictures of the wedding. So.
I like that picture.
Yeah. Yeah. So you know,
it's in the book. It's in the wedding book.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, that was kind of almost the first thing she and I did together as a married couple was figure out how to sign the wedding book.
Mm-hmm. What about the honeymoon?
Well, looking back on it, it was pretty uneventful. We just went. We went to Fort Walton Beach, and just puttered around for a few days.
So that wasn't the trip to Holland.
No.
For some reason, I thought they all went to Holland together for your honeymoon.
No. We went to Europe, maybe 8 or 9 months before we got married.
Okay.
Yeah. And that was a family trip, of course, Mom and Dad.
Yeah, everybody
went. But I was glad Marcia was able to go. But no, that was not a honeymoon.
Oh, cool.
But we had a good time.
Yeah. So let me see. Okay. Tell me about the day I was born.
Oh, wait a minute. Let me tell you one more thing about the honeymoon.
Yeah. Tell me one more thing about the honeymoon. Go for it.
We, as you know, our anniversary is very close to Mother's Day.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, we got married on, I think it was a Saturday, and the next day was actually Mother's Day. And we didn't drive all the way to Fort Walton Beach that night. We stopped in Evergreen, Alabama, mm-hmm. and spent the night. So we got up the next morning, and across the street from our motel was a... I think it was a Pentecostal church. It was a small backwoods church, but whatever. So we thought we'd go to church.
Mm-hmm.
And the pastor, it was Mother's Day now, raked mothers over the coals for every conceivable ill.
It's all the mom's fault.
It was all the mom's fault. And that was the Mother's Day sermon.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. we were really edified by this church service.
Yeah.
Yeah, so.
That's funny.
The other thing on our honeymoon, there was this little, place where you could have little rides, you know, little go-karts and stuff like that. And we got on this swing that went around in circles. You know,
mm-hmm.
and I got more motion. We both got incredibly motion sick riding these swings. Oh, it did
really?
Go in a circle. Yeah.
Huh.
And I almost threw up on the thing. Finally, the guy stopped. We got off, and it was both Marcia and me. We were both, and it took me about an hour sitting on that bench to get over it.
Really?
Yeah. And to this day, I've never been back on
I know which ones you're talking about.
I don't know why that affected us so badly. But,
yeah. Call them like a yo-yo. I don't forget the name of it,
No, you just said I was swinging around in a big circle, but
yeah,
it was enough. Yeah.
Yeah. Tell me about the day I was born. How did you feel the first time you saw me or got to hold me? I'm the middle, of course, of the biological kids.
Yeah. Well, it was our intent for you to round out our family. So, certainly. You were wanted. Of course, Jonathan was wanted too in a different way, but we were very glad. You know, it was interesting when you came out that it was obvious that you were blonde and Jerry was much darker, and it was interesting to me how a similar set of genetics could come out
so differently,
which was good.
What do you remember about the day? It was a Sunday, from what I understand. I
don't remember what day it was.
Why
don't you pause it for a sec? Well, of course, one of the first things probably every parent is that you had 10 fingers, 10 toes, 2 eyes, you know, that kind of stuff. Because you look normal. And, of course, you did, and we were quite pleased with that. And Marcia's labor was not difficult at all, so that was good. The other interesting thing, I don't know how intimate we're going to get here, but, you know, Marcia took fertility drugs to get pregnant with Jerry
mm-hmm.
and did not to get pregnant with you. So you were kind of a natural, not that Jerry's unnatural, but without intervention. Yeah, which is interesting. It's not supposed to work that way, but
hmm.
so We're very glad for that.
Jonathan was that way too, obviously.
Yeah.
All right.
Pause it for a sec. Okay.
Can you tell me about one of your happiest memories of me?
Of you? Pause for a second.
Okay.
I think my happiest memory of you, maybe the most proud, was when you decided to go into the ministry. I was real glad for that. Not that I wouldn't have been proud of you anyway,
yeah,
or whatnot, but you know, I thought that was a great calling, and certainly since then you've done well. And so,
I don't even remember really telling you or telling people. It's not one of those things like, you know, that's etched in my mind. But obviously that's a big thing to
also say. I enjoyed our trip to Emory. When we went to Emory together, you know, that was a lot of fun for me, and I was really glad that it worked out well for you.
Yeah, it was a good place to go to school. Can you tell me about one of your least happy memories of me?
Gosh, nothing comes to mind. Not really. I guess maybe the time you wrecked the car, but wreck is too strong a word. I mean,
with Jonathan in the car?
Yeah, it was just a fender bender.
Well, a fender bender that knocked out the Carlisle's van.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
David was not paraplegic.
I think I was more frightened than than unhappy, so to speak. So. Not pleasant memory, I'll put it that way.
That's fair.
But, because, you know, there was physical danger there, so to speak.
Yeah.
I can't think of anything. That was probably the worst.
Okay. How has being a parent changed you?
Oh, well, Lord. I think it has made me be more patient with people. That might have happened with age anyway.
Yeah.
But certainly every child has been different, and it's been a little bit of a challenge to do what I thought was best for that particular personality.
Mm.
You know, and so that has, you know, kind of the same principles. I know it sounds really squirrely, but, you know, I'm president of the board at the theater.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm dealing with people constantly at the theater. And it's the same kind of thing. People have to be treated differently at the theater as we did it at home.
Mm-hmm.
You know, something that works for one person won't work for another. So some have to be cajoled, others have to be kind of led, and
mm-hmm.
you know, others can be told what to do, so to speak. And so I think that my approach to individuals, others, I think that has been altered a little bit by the experience of being a parent.
Well, your kids are definitely different, so.
Yeah.
Different people with different. One memory I have, I don't remember what it was I was upset about, but somehow Jerry had done something like wonderful or amazing, or maybe he was hanging out with his friends and I wasn't allowed to or something like that. I just remember it was late at night and you're trying to get me to go to sleep to relax, to chill out. Because that was a lot of what you did, I feel like, as a parent with me, was just helping me not be so, to calm down, you know. Mm-hmm. But I remember laying in bed, being upset about something, and I kid you not, you'd like, look at me, you said, Jack, you're going to make more money than Jerry one day. And like, you know, I just slept really sound. And I mean, like, you know, there's a part of me that, like, as a parent, it's like, I can't believe you'd say that. And then the other part of me is like, well, yeah, that worked. That was good. That was great. So, you know, kind of.
I don't remember that.
You don't remember that? Yeah. I remember that. Yeah. Fun stuff. What's your best advice for raising kids?
Oh God. One, love them.
Mm-hmm.
Two, love them.
Yeah.
Three, love them. You know, No parent is perfect. You know, no child is perfect. But the only way you can really get around all of that is to do your best, to do what's best for the child, and to love that person, and to
Anything else you want to add for the advice?
That and be flexible.
Mm-hmm.
You know, try to think about what's best for the child and go with that. But I think most parents do that.
I'm going to add Desmond to the list of interviewers. What are your wishes for me?
Oh, goodness. They've pretty much been fulfilled. I mean, stability in your life, a happy family,
mm-hmm.
beautiful kids, fun career,
mm-hmm.
you know, things that most everybody wants. But doing well, and I'm really glad for that.
Cool. Can you tell me about your grandparents? Or your great-grandparents?
My father's parents, we didn't really visit with them a lot. Dad's mother, when we were living in Florida, about the 60s or so, came and stayed with us for a couple weeks. And of course, significant language barriers as well as age barriers. So she came across to me quite distant and nervy. I don't
mm-hmm.
think she was comfortable in retrospect.
Your mother's mother?
My mother's mother, her name is Jeanette, and actually my sister's named after
her. Oh, okay,
her.
I didn't know that.
Was a very pleasant woman.
Yeah.
Really delightful. She was a lot of fun. She was compassionate. She was fun to be around. But significant language barriers and, of course, geography is pretty significant.
Mm-hmm.
So didn't have a chance to develop a relationship with her. I just knew who she was and knew what kind of person she was, but that was about it. Mom's father died, I think, in 1956.
Mm-hmm.
I don't have any memory of him. So, and Dad's dad was a nice enough guy. I mean, he's pleasant. He seemed comfortable around me, more so than Dad's mom.
Mm-hmm.
But again, you know, there was never a chance to develop any relationship with the grandparents because of the geography.
Yeah.
I met them and...
Were they all in Deventer? I mean, Opa was from Deventer.
Deventer, yes. And
but that, Oma was not.
No, Oma... my mother was from Hilversum.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, I don't think I knew that. So I assume that's where your grandparents were, in both those two places.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Cool. All right.
Well, the thing about that, see, is that basically I don't have a role model for grandparents,
mm-hmm.
and now I am one.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so this is kind of new territory.
Huh? I hadn't thought about that.
For Marcia, well, not for Marcia, not quite so much, but for me.
Mm-hmm.
And Marcia, of course, had relationships with her grandparents.
And you didn't know any of your great grandparents?
I met Jeanette Flink.
Yeah.
My mother's mother.
Right, right.
Parents. Johann Echels. But I don't remember her name.
Mm.
And I met them once when we went back when I was a kid. Mom and I went back to Europe for about a month and stayed with her mother, obviously. And so her mother's parents were also in the home.
Mm.
They were quite elderly and pretty much stuck to themselves, but they were very pleasant people. I liked them. You know, they were always glad to see me, especially the old man. He was always smiling. But again, I didn't develop any relationship with him. You know, so. But they were the only great grandparents that I met.
Gotcha. Cool. Tell me about a teacher or an adult that had a big impact on your life while you were growing up.
I would suppose that I would have to say Dr. Kenneth Carter, who is my chemistry professor at college.
Mm-hmm. At Presbyterian, right?
Presbyterian College, yeah. I admired him greatly. He was very bright, hardworking, you know, took an interest in his students.
Uh-huh.
Was very demanding. But demanding in a an appropriate way.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he expected you to learn the material, and if you didn't, you know, didn't make the grade.
Yeah.
But he fostered my interest in science. He hired me to work at the labs, which I thought was a great honor.
Mm-hmm.
So you know, as a student, I was in a chemistry lab 5 afternoons a week. So I was around. I was in the chemistry department a lot, and it was almost like a home. You know,
awesome.
I became very comfortable being there, mm-hmm. and knew what was going on around me, and had some responsibility, and you know, so that was good. That along with the church, but of course, I had teachers in high school. My first grade teacher was Mrs. Green.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember that I had a pleasant experience with her, but I don't remember her very well.
Yeah.
And I can't tell you that she influenced my life, per se, but Dr. Carter...
Definitely.
Yeah. Made me start taking academics seriously.
Good. Yeah, that's a good thing. What are you proudest of, personally and professionally?
Well, personally, frankly, I'm proudest of how well my kids are doing. You know, I mean, I look at other people's families sometimes, and, you know, they'll have hardships of different kinds. And I think we're very blessed that. So I'm very proud of my family and glad that everyone's doing well. Professionally, I think probably the things that I'm most proudest of was my work with Health Information Designs, writing proposals for them. The two proposals, one with the Texas Department of Transportation for $8 million contract, and then single-handedly wrote the proposal for the drug information systems for the state of Mississippi Medicaid, mm-hmm. which was about a $20 million contract. So working for Ty was fun. He was mm-hmm. Very positive and easy to work for, and made you proud to be able to accomplish things like that. And he would give you credit for what you did, and so that was fun.
Yeah, I know you enjoyed working on it.
Yeah, and I enjoy the work I'm doing now, teaching biology.
Mm-hmm. You know, when you can access your email.
Yeah. Well, fortunately, I can access the grading system, but and working with students is kind of like working with your children, because they're all different,
mm-hmm.
you know, and they all have different needs and approach things differently, and you have to be pretty flexible. So, but I enjoy the work.
Cool.
Oh, if you want to back up.
Yeah.
The other thing that I'm really proud of is our theater.
Mm-hmm.
We've accomplished great things this year. You know, we raised $100,000 to buy a new lighting system, which for our theater, that's a, you know,
big deal.
It's a big deal, that much money.
Yeah.
And had enough money left over to build the outdoor
stage.
Outside
part, yeah.
Yeah, and so I think over the long run, both those two things are going to make a big difference with the theater in the long run. Someone suggested to me when I bragged about the lights a little bit, she said, well, you know, when are you going to get the seats changed? Because mm-hmm. the seats in our auditorium are actually pretty old,
mm-hmm.
starting to wear out. But, you know, I'd pretty much burned out on projects. I'd had enough. You know, I was going to leave that for the next administration.
Yeah.
Well, the city of Gulf Shores called me about 2 weeks ago. They are replacing all the chairs in their chamber.
At the city.
At the city. And they're either going to throw them away or give them to us.
Cool.
So we have...
Have you looked at them?
Oh, yeah, they're great. They're great. And so... So changing the seats out became a project that got thrown into my lap,
yeah,
so to speak. So we're going to do that next month.
Great.
So.
Well, there'll be some cost.
There'll be some, but they'll be minor. Pretty much just like buying new lag bolts to put on the floor, but that kind of stuff. So anyway, the three big things that the theater needed, the outdoor stage, the lights, and new seats, will be things that have happened under my administration.
Yeah. Great.
You know, in the past year. So I think that'll be a mark on the theater that'll last for years.
Awesome.
So.
Good deal. How would you like to be remembered?
Oh, goodness. a loving, compassionate person, giving, faithful. And by faithful, I mean faith in God.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that kind of stuff. You know, teaching Sunday school was another thing that I kind of enjoy and am to some degree proud of, which is, how do you be proud of something like that? But, I mean, proud in a healthy way.
Yeah.
Not like, hey, I'm a better teacher than all these other guys, kind of thing. So, I'm hoping that work brings people a little bit closer to God, you know, and that's a profound thing. You know, I mean, that's an impact that can last for all eternity. I mean, at the end of the age, the theater will disappear. But if someone's a little closer to God because of a Sunday school lesson, that's a pretty good thing.
Absolutely. Good deal. All right. Well,
I think I'd also like to be remembered as a good parent.
Yeah. I'd say you are.
Oh, no. I tried. Some days are better than others.
Some days are. But most are good.
Good.
Well,
I'm proud of you.
Well, thanks. I'm proud of you. Thanks for doing this. It's just a good little way to save some memories.
You know, you mentioned this yesterday, and what came to my mind was when, I must have been in the ninth grade, eighth grade, something like that. And I don't remember how it happened, but I became acquainted with a girl who lived in South Carolina. And so I rode the bus from Decatur to wherever she was. Oh, I remember what it was. Dad had served in that church a little bit, and that's how I met her. And so I went to spend the weekend with him, and I'd just gotten for Christmas a tape player. A reel-to-reel tape player, about that big, battery-powered.
Mm-hmm.
It only had enough tape to record for like 10 minutes. I mean, it was state-of-the-art kind of stuff because this was like, you know, early 60s.
Mm-hmm.
And her grandfather was living with him. And so he read a poem and I recorded it. And... thought that was really cute, just playing around, you know.
Yeah.
And later overwrote the tape. Mm. And he died about 2 months after he made that recording. And to this day, I wish I'd kept it.
Yeah.
You know. Mm. But I was just a kid. I was just playing around with it.
Goofing.
You know, sentimental things like that didn't mean anything to me. So that's what came to my mind when you talked about recording, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Recording thoughts and stuff.
Well, for me, I mean, it may be a little selfish. At some point in the past, you know, for my kids or my grandkids, you know, I'd like for them to know you.
Mm-hmm.
The one of the neat things about the StoryCorps folks is that their stuff gets indexed at the Library of Congress, so it becomes something that becomes part of the broader American story.
Mm-hmm.
So. Thank you for letting me interview you.
Oh, you're welcome.
I love you.
I love you. But yeah, I mean, you know, my parents have their story, and it's, you know, it's embodied now in my memory.
Yeah.
And when I die, it'll be gone.
Yeah.
You know, and as we've already discussed, their parents and their grandparents, you know. So, for example, I mean, and you know, they have significant stories too. My mother's father, I don't know if you knew this or not, but he was a Dutch Nazi. He was a member of the Nazi Party.
I didn't know that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and after the war, he went to jail for a year because of his political leaning. So, you know, there's things like that in our family, you know. I'm sure there are other stories like that too, you know, that are significant and gone. You know, and my mother had a brother, Hans, and they adopted kids. I have no idea. If these people are my cousins.
Yeah.
I have no idea where they are, who they are, what their names might be, you know.
I know Opa didn't really talk to his brother at all.
No, they didn't get along at all.
Yeah.
And now I have...
Do you remember any reason for that?
Hmm?
Do you remember any reason for that? Specifically?
I think that's just paternal, Cain and Abel kind of stuff.
Yeah.
I think that Dad's brother was older, and I think he was the fair-headed child of the family, and I think Dad resented it. That's one reason why I think he left the country to get away from his brother.
Netherlands is a small place.
Yeah.
At least so many places to go.
Yeah. But he did have a daughter. Her name is Aunt. And she and I at some point communicated. But there was not a whole lot to talk about, so it kind of petered out. But Karen, I think, is more careful about communicating with my cousin. Because she had a son, and I think...
Are they like...
I'm sorry?
Karen and the son the same age or something?
Well, of course, they're cousins once removed.
Yeah,
they're about the same age. And so she has kept in touch with him better than I have.
Yeah.
But I think for my parents, you know, as much as they could, they broke from the Netherlands and what all that meant. And devoted themselves totally. Just built a new life here and a new family, and everything here was new for them. And so they didn't go out of their way to keep contact with the family.
Is that, and I mean, I doubt that there's like, in my recollection, it's not like there's family, friends, or whatever that shared a similar story. But is that something that, like, have you met other people your age whose parents came over to the United States from Europe to start a new life?
No.
It's a pretty rare thing.
Yeah.
Because
Well, see, in those days, immigration was much more tightly controlled than it is now. People weren't crossing the border, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, and they had a quota.
Right.
And so
the
first year they applied to come to this country, they
didn't make it.
The second year they did, the quota number came up, and so they came over.
Is it? Well,
But yeah, see, my parents didn't even speak Dutch at home.
Yeah.
Now, that was how big the break they tried to make. They weren't interested in bringing me up Dutch.
Yeah. Is that true in Indonesia?
They were Americans. No.
You were born
in Indonesia, yeah. Well, it's a little harder for me to say because, of course, while physically I was there, you know, I don't remember it. Yeah, I have no memories of Indonesia. But from what I can tell, I think they went there with the idea of being there forever. I don't think they intended to ever leave Indonesia. That was going to be their new home.
But the political situation changed.
Became untenable, yeah. Well, and economics, too. It was both. And that's also why they came here, was for economics.
Yeah.
You okay?
Well, that's not a, I mean, like, moving countries is not something that, like, I say to myself, well, there's always that option. Like, you know, I can't say any part of me's ever said, you know, I totally just
would like to move to Australia.
Sure would like to go to Europe or Australia and just live there.
Yeah, move there, live there permanently.
I mean, it's a generational thing, too. I haven't had to watch a world war happen in my lap. Cool. Well, thank you.
Thank you.